Hello, and welcome to another summer edition of Movie Time. Julie Rigg here, glad you could join me for this half hour of relaxed listening as we look back over some film highlights this past year. For Australian cinema, one of the big events was The Sapphires, a film about four young Aboriginal women who form a soul group under the guidance of an unlikely Irish impresario and black music fanatic to tour Vietnam and entertain the troops there. The women are played by Deborah Mailman, Jessica Mowboy, Shari Sebbins and Miranda Tapsell. And the impresario is played by the very funny comic actor Chris O'Dowd. Originally a stage musical written by Tony Briggs, The Sapphires was inspired by the stories of his mother and his aunties who toured in a similar group. And his mother and aunt, in particular, travelled to Vietnam as singers. In this panel, we'll hear from Tony Briggs, from his mother, Lauren Robinson, and aunt, Lois Peeler, who talk about their experiences which inspired the film. And they were joined by the film's director, Wayne Blair, and producers, Rosemary Blight and Kylie Dufresne, in an event at the Melbourne International Film Festival. It's hosted by my colleague, Jason DeRosso. Now, the film The Sapphires also deals with everything from the influence of the American Civil Rights Movement on Australian Aboriginal politics in the 60s and 70s to the stolen generations and the issue of fair-skinned Aboriginal identity. This film has been a huge success at the box office. A month after its release, it had taken $10 million. By now, it's closer to $20. And the way audiences have embraced the film is remarkable, because I doubt these issues would have found this kind of big audience years ago. But above all, The Sapphires is a feel-good film. I came out dancing. So let's hear from the people involved. We go now to Melbourne's historic Forum Theatre, a day or so after the film's premiere. Here's Jason.
To get things started, I want to ask Tony Briggs, this has been many years in the making, and of course you begin with a stage play. Did you always think it was going to end up on the big screen? Did it always seem like a film to you?
Yes, it was always something that I wanted it to be. You know, but you never know where your dreams are going to end up. But yeah, in short, yes.
What was it that you thought was particularly filmic about it, do you think?
Look, I just think the whole, the entire, you know, it's such an enormous story. There were so many elements to the story to begin with. And I could just visualise a lot of the stuff that Mum and Annie Lois had experienced. And also, you know, the music gave me a lot of visuals as well, and just putting the whole lot together in my mind. And as Mum was telling me a lot about her experiences, I could see it playing out. You know, one story in particular that is etched in my memory is when Mum was telling me about a time that they were in a helicopter, and Mum looked out the window. They were going from one venue to another. Mum looked out the window and said, "Oh, look, fireworks." And there were tracer bullets coming through the air, you know. And it was, you know, I just, you know, like, for me, that was something that just said, like, she was very young at the time, the naivety of the times, and the images that she would have, you know, would have experienced at that time. It just sort of stuck in my mind, and
Laurel, I want to bring you in here and ask about those times and that kind of innocence, or the loss of innocence, I guess, you experienced on going to Vietnam. It must have been one of the most important experiences in your formation as a human being, I imagine, the things you saw.
Yes, it was. At the time, I didn't really realise the danger part of it. And all I knew, we were there to entertain troops, and we were well protected by the military police. And it wasn't until I came home that we looked back on it and saw the terrible fighting on the news, how bad it was.
Australia, of course, was a country divided in many ways because of the racial issue, the black and white issue.
C-
Can you tell me a little bit about what you encountered, the sort of attitudes you encountered when you went to Vietnam and met the American GIs and so forth, who of course were coming from their own country that was torn apart by racial tensions and other sorts of social tensions? Were there kindred spirits there straight away amongst the GIs you met, or did they find it difficult to know who you were or place you?
Yes, I think they didn't realise there were black people in Australia, and with the at the time we had the R&R coming into Sydney from the GIs, and that's when a lot of them would meet Aboriginal people. But when we went over, they didn't even know what the word Aboriginal meant, and that there were black people there here in Australia. So they were very interested to find out a lot about our history.
Lois, what was your experience like?
Well, I just wanted to say that in that era we had the White Australian policy, and we were a very divided nation, and that a lot of our social life as Aboriginal people was with our own mobs. We would also welcome black people that came to this country because of that policy that existed at the time. And people through the likes of Pastor Sir Douglas Nichols, who had a church here in Gertrude Street, Fitzroy. And we were like ambassadors. So we used to welcome all the black people that came here because it was such a, you know, a feeling about them not being able to be here, you know, and welcomed. So that was a role that we had. So we met a lot of people that were coming here. And then, as Laurel said, you know, actually informing people about the Aboriginal situation, because, you know, we didn't get the referendum until 1967, so we weren't Australian citizens until then. So
the film certainly does put the politics and, I guess, the political element to the story front and centre. I mean, it's quite clear. There are other elements, of course, too. There's comedy, there's all sorts of things. But the politics are really there, front and centre in the film. I'm just wondering, Wayne Blair, was this always a real key to you in the kind of story you wanted to portray, given that, for other aspects, it's quite a light movie?
Yeah, I think that brief was really from Tony and Keith, just about reminding ourselves the environment of the world that we're in. And hey Tony, like, that was, you know, what you guys wanted to add.
Keith Thompson and I, we talked at length for a long time, over quite a few years actually, about that element to the film. And Keith liked to describe it as, you know, handling it with kid gloves. And I'd always say, you know, I'd like to educate with stealth and not so much stand off on my podium. And, you know, because I'd come, when I first had the idea of writing the stage play, I'd come off the back of a stage show called Stolen, about the Stolen Generation. So, you know, and I always say that those type of stories will always have a place with Aboriginal storytellers, you know, theatre goers, movie filmmakers, etc. But when Keith and I started talking about it, yeah, it was one of those things we wanted to, because there was so much, like I said, there's so much scope to this adventure that we both wanted to put up there on the screen as well. We wanted as many people as possible to enjoy the experience.
Do you think, I suppose post the apology and so forth, do you think audiences are more aware of some of this history, or did you approach this thinking that audiences weren't really that aware, especially younger audiences? Are these stories that haven't been told enough?
Oh no, I can't talk for Keith, but I think it'd be pretty arrogant of me to think that our audiences don't know enough about their own history. I write or I perform in a piece as an actor, and I make my decisions based on how I feel, you know, what moves me. And I know that this country knows who they are. I just think that look, at the end of the day, for me, I wanted to tell the story that was as entertaining as possible, as I could possibly make it, as I saw it, and I didn't want to shy away from politics at all. It's impossible to put four black women on a stage, up on the screen, in a leading role, and present it to the world from this country without there being politics. That's political in itself, because it's a very rare thing that has happened in film in Australia.
You're with Movie Time here on RN Summer, and today we're hearing from some of the people who inspired Australia's best-selling film this year, The Sapphires, as well as from some who made it. In this panel, hosted by Jason DeRosso, we're hearing from director Wayne Blair, writer Tony Briggs, and with them are producers Rosemary Blight and Carly Dufresne. Back to the forum. Recorded in August at the Melbourne International Film Festival. And just a note, there's a slight feedback in some sections of the recording ahead.
Kylie or Rosemary, I'd like to bring you in here and ask about how you view the local audience and the international audience with regards to a film like this, you know, a film with four black women as the main protagonists. What's the mood in the market like? How do you judge the mood in the market today in Australia and internationally for a story of this type? Because, of course, once upon a time it would have been impossible to imagine an Australian film with such high production values coming out telling this story.
I think it certainly it goes without saying that the successful run of Indigenous films like Samson and Delilah or Brand New Day certainly paved the way for us domestically. I think that's without a doubt been really beneficial for us. And I think what was interesting internationally about this film is that we also had the context of the Vietnam War, which was a very universally known story, but we were coming into it from a very different angle that no one had seen before, which was the experiences of these Aboriginal women. So I guess any kind of misgivings or misunderstandings about that internationally, having the Vietnam War and having really, a half Australian, half American cast, was certainly really beneficial.
To me, it's almost like, on the one hand, it's a film that's the story we think we know on a couple of levels. It's the story of the band that try and make it and go through their trials. It reminded me of The Commitments or something. It's the story of the Vietnam War, and yet there's a twist, which is always important, I think, for stories we think we know.
Very much. I think it goes back to what Tony and Keith and as a team we got together and wanted it to be something that reached quite wide, but without losing the truth of it. So the truth of this story is it is for Aboriginal women who did this in the late 60s when it was almost, as Lois said, that they were not even classed as citizens of this country until 1967. So for us it was about, well, how can we reach an audience? How can we go wide? And I think the big key is the music. Music brings everyone together. And, we used to go, when we were trying to sell the film, we went out and Wayne, Carly and myself would go out and do song and dance routines around the world. And when you put on the music, everyone connected it up. And it was just, and so we just kept, Wayne actually put the soundtrack or put, songs on an iPod and would play them to people. And it was the music that connected. And music in itself, there's, especially soul music, it is about, as Chris O'Dowd would say in the movie, it is about loss. It does actually say something to people. And that really helped us break through people not knowing stuff, I suppose.
Could I ask a question, though, that did strike me, that, and the music is great, I agree with you. I also, I do like country music. I came to it late in life, and I know that country music, as the film points out, is quite big in Aboriginal communities. Have you received any flack for the kind of, there's a rather dismissive line in the film towards country music, which I know is said in fun, but what's been the reaction there?
We like country music.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think many Aboriginal people do.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. So has there been a kind of reaction? Does that line get quite a laugh?
Yeah, I think it does. I nobody said anything to me except for you. Really? I like country music. Yeah. We listen to lots and lots and lots of different types of music, and rock and roll and country and soul. And while we were creating this, and I guess in a way it's a sort of it's a little bit of a sort of a tongue in cheek kind of thing, because. We were always listening to country music, but I was always listening to soul. But one of my cousins and I was like, "Oh, can you have to play that again?" And it's just a tongue in cheek thing.
Now, a couple of people mentioned to me like, "Oh, I like the film, but like, that's not really true, Wang." And I was like, "That was my mum." But it could be a different film. Jess could be like, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," or something. It could be they could be singing Charlie Pride in Vietnam. I don't know. But it didn't happen like that, Jason, so yeah.
I'll just deal with it.
Yeah.
Wayne, I want to ask you about being a performer. You were in the cast of one of the original stagings of this.
Yep.
How does being a cast member on the stage play on which the film is based inform you as a director?
Well, we were in Melbourne when it opened and we were just down the road there at the Arts Centre and... Tony had written the piece solely at that stage, and there was Deb, myself, Rachel Mazza, Ursula Jovic, Lisa Flanagan, and a number of other cast members. So we didn't really know what we had, and then the Melbourne Theatre Company opened, and people it was just a beautiful thing because people had smiles on their faces, they got up and danced, and to get people in the Fairfax, we're in the Playhouse. To Melbourne, and basically
For the RN audience, you're going to have to explain that reference. Yeah.
Oh, just at the Playhouse Theatre at the Arts Centre, I suppose they're watching Queen Lear or they're watching The Crucible or something like that. For them to get a little, these four black women on stage, the Sapphires, 800 people every night, it is a big thing because they're celebrating and they want to be a Sapphire. So that was it was great, and so we get a great reaction. And in Belvoir Street Theatre in Sydney, the show sold out on the preview night, and we had 6 weeks of acting to go. So that was a big thing back in those days, and that didn't happen since Cloud Street when Neil was directed Cloud Street. So it was huge, and at Belvoir Street because it was a much more intimate place. It was like being, it was like being in a bar or something, like one of those little cool bars down the road here. It was sort of there you were, and the girls were just performing, and we had this last number where Tony wrote a medley, and Land of a Thousand Dances were there, and everyone was just like in the audience like that. And to be a part of a show like that, where you're not, as an actor, you're not going to your soul, or you're playing someone, or you're playing Othello, or someone in True West, and you have to be sad every night. Everyone was happy. And people got up and applauded, and they danced, and they stayed in the theatre to talk about this show, and it stayed with them. So, being a part of that, and having the love, and the joy, and a simple statement of, hey, we're all together sort of thing, and we're all human beings, and we want to love. You want to love, Jason. You want to have joy in your life, you want to have a little dance, and you get sad sometimes, but then at the end of the day, let's all have a laugh together. That's what it gave me. And when Tony and Keith and Rose and Kylie, they worked and got a bit of heat around the world and interest around the world, that's what we wanted to sort of bleed into the film, and to keep that sort of why we are here, what we love about cinema, when we have a little love about any story, we have a laugh, we have a cry, and we learn something. And so, that point of difference of having these four Koori women go to Vietnam, and I haven't seen a film where these four Aboriginal women go to Vietnam. I've seen a lot of American films, Charlie Sheen or what have you, go to Vietnam, and it's hard and it's tough, and a man finds out who he is. These four black women, I don't think I'll ever see that again, unless we do a Sapphires too.
But it strikes me
it's
that...
It's up to the producers.
Yeah.
filmmaking is obviously something that is done in a very compartmentalised way, whereas, you do a lot of theatre, you work in theatre a lot, and theatre is something where you do get that organic feel of the story being told in a certain arc of time and the ebb and flow of a live audience. was it useful to have that almost as muscle memory in your head as a director when you then went to direct this very different sort of product for the screen, to go, okay, these are the beats I'm wanting to hit. I remember them being hit in the theatres.
To be honest, it was, you know, seven years since we did the theatre show, so, and I think Tony and Keith fleshed out the script so much more. So the film was a different beast to what the theatre show was, Jason. So, you know, a little bit of that was there, but my mind was totally into this film script with these four sort of different girls to the theatre show, and of course, the Australian Dave Lovelace was in the theatre show, and now we have an Irish Dave Lovelace. So a number of things had changed. So yeah, I you know, maybe I should have, but I didn't use much of the theatre show too. But you know, I suppose subconsciously it's always there. It's somewhere in my body or in my heart or my mind.
Tony, when did Chris O'Dowd become, when did this character become an Irishman?
Well, in the creation of the characters, Keith and I talked about, you know, Dave Lovelace being, you know, Australian, and then we had settled on him being English, and I'd loosely based him on one of my uncles who is Irish, but. It was not something that was, you know, I had consciously pushed for, and so we'd sort of kept him, you know, it was an English character, and you know, one thing led to another, and you know, we all discussed what we needed to do with the character, and it just sort of, you know, it was sort of an organic type of thing, and it just, you know, and really a blessing in disguise at the end of the day. And how it really happened is really a question for Wayne and Kylie and Rose. But from a writer's perspective, that's how it sort of...
Wayne, can you fill us in a bit more? Because I think he's fantastic in it, and I think he even steals some of the scenes. He's so funny, so charismatic. It strikes me also that there's almost a nice resonance between an Irishman and these black girls. You know, the Irish, of course... you know, often one of the more, I guess, downtrodden peoples of Europe, you might say, and certainly have that history with the English, which is a very fraught one. Tell us more about how Chris came to it.
Well, basically, to cut a long story short, we were at that stage where we needed this actor to come on board. I think we'd just cast the four girls, and there was a couple of people around the world, for whatever reason, were very, very interested in the script, and didn't end up signing the dotted line. And so Kylie and Rose made the decision to, because sending myself to the LA and to meet with agents just to talk about the script. So basically I went to everyone, and I went into UTA's offices, and they had about 8 or 10 people, and I sort of gave them the brief of the character in the film. And they said, oh, you got to see this guy, Chris O'Dowd. And Bridesmaids opened the weekend before. It made $26 million in the first weekend, and you know, I watched the trailer on the lady's computer, and he was only in about 15 seconds of the trailer. I was like, oh, okay, it could be okay. And I went to the Arclight that afternoon and saw the film, Bridesmaids, and I wasn't an IT crowd person, because he's in that sort of cult English show IT crowd. And I watched Bridesmaids, and I made the phone call to Rose and Kylie to say, yeah, we should have a look at this guy. And I think about 3 or 4 weeks later, he was signed on board. So, and then, obviously, his Irish sensibilities came to the fore, and it was just, I think it was a 5-minute conversation with Kylie, Rose, Tony and Keith saying, hey, we should just lean towards him being Irish instead of English, and they all agreed, and that was that, really.
Did he know anything about Indigenous Australia or race relations in this country?
Yeah, he knew a bit, actually, and it's funny, he sort of talked about it. He's from a small town in Ireland called Boyler, and at the moment what's happening in that town is that because of the industry, there's no industry there, so the town is slowly dying away because of other outside forces. So, you know, like, and so he's produced this TV show called Mooney Boy, which gives work and employment to the town. And so he always mentioned about the similarities, about Irish being oppressed and Aboriginal people being oppressed, and he absolutely loved that. He got the he got the link straight away. It wasn't something he harped upon, but he was just it was always there, and he sort of talked about that straight away, to be honest. But he has a joke and laugh, and like even like that last scene in the film where they're singing Sugar Pie Honey Bunch. I was on a boat with Warwick on the in the river, and at the end of Sugar Pie Honey Bunch, we had about 40 Aboriginal extras. And in his audacious type of way, he said, what did he say? He yelled out at the end of the song. Everyone was clapping and said, now get off my land. You know, being an Irishman, and I suppose Chris O'Dowd was the only person that could say that that night. They all laughed, seeing the irony of it, of course. So we should have kept that in the film. Not. Oh, well, you know, it's another film, but... yeah, so it ends in a long way, Jason, very much all over it, and yeah, so...
It seems to me that you may have given him a little bit of leeway to sort of riff a little with the lines in the film. He gets a bit of a flow in some scenes, and it strikes me as being something quite spontaneous.
Yeah, he wouldn't change things. The essence of the scene was there. Well, he did change things, but when he would say the words, he would make them their own, as any actor does that has... any bit of nuance and sense, and he did that, and Tony and Keith sort of gave me permission to sort of lean that way with him. So in a sort
you're
of,
nodding your head there, Tony.
Yeah.
Oh no, he excuse me. Yeah, I was just nodding at what Wayne was saying about Chris as an actor. He tweaks them, put it that way, and he makes the lines that are there on the page work and come alive in a way that all of us were completely blown away by, and you saw it on set. You could see him doing it on set. It was magic. You could see the magic happening, and he was always respectful of what we had for him to work with.
Yeah,
and he just, you know,
and it was encouraged. Yeah, you're right. It was sort of like, okay, just let him go for a little bit and see how we go. And usually you'd call cut or thank you very much at the end of a scene, but I'd sort of let the scene sort of go and see what Deb or himself came up with, and usually that has stayed in the picture.
You've been listening to The Sapphires, Heart and Soul, a forum recorded this year at the Melbourne International Film Festival after the premiere of a film Australians have taken to their hearts. On the panel were director Wayne Blair, producers Carly Dufresne and Rosemary Blight, writer Tony Briggs, and two of the women on whose story The Sapphires was based: Tony's mother, Laurel Robinson, and auntie, Lois Peeler. Now, if you'd like to hear the full-length recording of this forum, you'll find it under the Movie Time Movie Talks button on our webpage. Just search for Arian and then Movie Time. I'll be back next week with another conversation, this one with Ben Zeitlin, musician, animator, and director of one of this year's most remarkable films, Beasts of the Southern Wild. Stay relaxed, won't you? Enjoy the summer and the movies. Catch you next week.